Welcome back to Ohio Exopolitics. Tonight I'm going to talk with Douglas Duane Dietrich. He's known as a renegade military historian, a radio host for Revolution Radio, an artist, a military reference technician. He's a favorite presenter, an all-around amazing individual. And it's I'm glad to have him on the show. We're just going to kind of sit back and have a relaxing conversation. Douglas, how are you?
I'm fine. Much the better for speaking with you, Mark. Very much appreciate this opportunity for a friendly phone call over the next hour, and glad to casually catch up with you after all these years. I think it's been years since we last spoke.
I'd have to check my records, but I think it's been a year or two. I don't know how that happens, but it does happen.
It does. It does, sadly. And wish we had maintained more contact, but definitely I have been inquiring about you. I know that my own executrix producer, Laura Lee Solomon, used to produce for you, and you've t kind of taken off into the cyber environment on your own, and that's wonderful. But Mark Snyder and myself used to be Revolution Radio co-hosts together, or hosts on the same station.
Right. And are you still there?
Oh
Revolution
yeah,
Radio?
oh yeah. It's pretty much my home base, and definitely I'm comfortable there, and certainly am definitely happy to, of course, appear on other programs and work with other people, and it's always fun. So, how's your music going, by the way?
Oh, thank you for asking. Very well. I haven't played out in 2 or 3 weeks. And I set my guitar down, which was really weird because I set it down for a long time and I've just started in the past 2 or 3 days playing again.
Oh.
I think I spend too much time on the computer sometimes and it gets me away from it, you know?
Yes, very much so. That's the computer is very, it's a vortex,
It
and
is.
yeah,
You can
it'll
get
it.
away from it. It's like addiction or something. I don't know.
Oh, it just cops the mind, and it's one of those things that I think we're all challenged by it. Anyone who we even right now are speaking on electronic medium, definitely it's one of those things where I think our entire generation today is going to have its issues with because it's so wrapped up in the virtual world as opposed to the real world. And that's part of the problem is that reality itself becomes quite permeable in that environment, and it's easy to rewrite reality like it was a program
Right,
through
right.
that environment.
Right. And I think it makes you unbalanced. Like, and I've really had to take time in the past couple of weeks to say, okay, I'm gonna go get exercise, I'm gonna work out, okay, I'm gonna walk the dog, I'm gonna play my guitar. I'm gonna do other things off this damn computer.
Yeah, and we have to force ourselves to do that. Otherwise, the vortex will suck us in. And it's amazing how many emotions get involved with it as well, and how people are really make that they're interacting with other people on the level as if they were neighbors or living with them. It's as if I suppose there could be some romance about that, and the speaking of the electronic village or the electronic cottage. But I'm not quite sure that it's worked out for the best in many regards. But I'm glad that you're getting back into the music. I would hate to see you lose that to have it atrophy.
And that's the thing, lots can atrophy. I can remember when I heard you on Coast to Coast years ago. Do you ever go back on coast sometimes?
Oh, I'd be happy to go, of course, if they ask, but I doubt I'll ever be asked on again. It's one of the
What happened?
Oh, it's just one of those things. There wasn't any particular incident. It's more or less Coast to Coast AM, of course, is political as any other venue, and the politics of Coast to Coast AM are, of course, state politics. What we do need to remember is that America has, or the United States has, for all intents and purposes, a media monopoly that developed during the Second World War. During that period, period of time, everything was mobilized and slave circuited to the state. One of the things that was created for the United States media was the Office of War Information. The acronym was OWI. It was put under the administration of one of the most evil men you've never heard of, Elmer H. Davis. And Elmer H. Davis was a former radio man in the public speaking sense, in terms of speaking over that medium during the time it was developed as a method of communications beyond simply walkie-talkies, when it was taken to the point of a public spectrum for disseminating information. Elmer H. Davis was one of the talking heads or the pundits of his day. Roosevelt took him out of that venue, which is why no one remembers him in terms of popular history, and put him in charge of secretly coordinating all information that would reach the American public. And through that, they dominated the American understanding of the war effort. And the Office of War Information at the time of around 1945 went black. It went off the budget, off the books, and basically has coordinated America's dissemination of information ever since. So it works, of course, with intelligence agencies, the military, to basically, of course, dominate American perception of reality, or rather their misperception of reality. So the Americans have no concept what goes on in much of the world, and they live in a vacuum, and what's exposed to them, or rather what's kind of, how we say, misrepresented to them of the rest of the world, leads to their insane decision making, where they just continually work in lockstep with the federal government and its demands. Now, a lot of this, of course, has never changed, but it becomes more nuanced and more complicated, in the sense that there still is a need for the military junta, which runs our American empire, to present the delusion that there is private industry or industry independent of the government. Now, of course, all of it is slave circuited to the military, because it's all contracted by the military. Or the intelligence and various other aspects of that complex that would include the medical industry and pharmaceuticals, etc. It all slave circuits back to the junta. So when it's a great example is Coast to Coast AM. You have, in terms of Coast to Coast AM, it was started by Art Bell, of course, and you and I are old enough to remember Art Bell. And Art Bell was, of course, a someone who honestly did this on his own. He basically just started kind of like with ham radio, and was just doing a bunch of, shall we say, just crap. He was just kind of doing it out of his trailer. And he had a military background, of course. And he had his own issues, his own bizarre lifestyle. But his show came along at the right time in the right place, and it became this enormous national phenomena or success. It dominated the airwaves. Now, of course, we're talking about somebody who had no life. He had no life of his own. He just, other than the radio, he would just get on the radio for 8 to 12 hours straight every day. He did this every day. And so when he kept hammering his head against the wall broke, and he became this kind of phenomenon that became an item to purchase. It's kind of like Facebook. When Facebook became a large enough phenomenon, then Mark Zuckerberg put it on the market, and automatically it was bought up for all intents and purposes by the U.S. government, so they could just basically monitor all of the nuances of public response. It's certainly not a sales area. People don't buy things on Facebook. Advertising on Facebook has proven in general to be a tremendous failure, because people don't go to Facebook to buy anything. They go to eBay or they go to Amazon.com. So the only thing Facebook is good for is monitoring public response and where the public is going with certain fads or phases. So in the case of Coast to Coast AM, they ultimately purchased it through Premier Radio Network, which had it nationally syndicated anyway, and got it into the administration of Clear Channel. Clear Channel is owned, of course, by Billy Joe Red McCombs, who's a multimillionaire, one of the richest men in the world, according to Forbes. And one of the men on the board is Rear Admiral Bobby Ray Inman. Now, Rear Admiral Bobby Ray Inman is a ancient figure. Both these men are just old as dirt. They're like living fossils. Honestly, I don't even know if both of them are still alive, or if one of them is dead, or and the other one is in some state of like life support or something. But Bobby Ray Inman is the director of the National Security Agency. So Bobby Ray Inman is also a Federal Reservist. Okay. These facts are quite vetable. People can look up the history of some aspects of these men. In the case of Bobby Ray Inman, of course, the overwhelming majority of his resume is classified. So he definitely was involved in the Second World War in the Navy, and afterwards in the Atomic Navy, the Cold War Navy. He was still in the Ready Reserves, very much connected to the administration of naval affairs. And it was during that period of time that George Norrie, the host of Coast to Coast AM, who was put in to replace Art Bell, was working under Bobby Ray Inman, and George Norrie was a naval public relations officer. Now, of course, public relations is directly connected or indirectly connected to naval intelligence, and one of the jobs of the public relations officer is to take all the bad things that happen, negative things, and turn them into good things. I mean, they're spin doctors. So when people die in naval accidents, when people wind up having some horrible thing happen in the Navy, like a gang rape of a female sailor, all of this stuff is turned over to the spin doctor. And then the spin doctor makes it sound as if this was the best thing that ever happened. Well, that was the job of George Norrie. I mean, he did this for like 9 years, 9 years straight. He was active duty in the Navy. And of course, they have to be given some intelligence as to what's going on so they can spin it. So it's not like they're without any knowledge of what's going on. They have to know in order to doctor it up for public representation, the misrepresentation in most cases. So at that time, the boss, Bobby Ray Inman of George Norrie, his admiral, his commanding officer, by the time he was released from naval service, George Norrie had a fairly clean record. He had he had an entirely clean record as far as can be seen, and even had some honors. And he was made the host of Coast to Coast AM, and his boss is still his admiral, Bobby Ray Inman, who now directs the NSA. So there's nothing that gets out on Coast to Coast AM most of the time that is not coordinated. And when you have this kind of coordination, then, of course, it's a miracle I ever got on. So part of the politics of Coast to Coast AM was that when I first was brought on, it was about what was considered a relatively safe subject. It was a naval subject. And therefore, as a former spin doctor, they felt that George Norrie would be capable of representing anything that they felt was too controversial. And it's been so long since Pearl Harbor that it wasn't a threat, wasn't anything imminent, wasn't anything contemporary, and they felt none of the younger people would care. And it was still way too sensitive for them. And so when I was brought on to speak about it, of course, it was something that was monumental in its impact. And that was how you had heard of myself. That was how most people heard of myself. That was the introduction of myself to the American public, was the exposition of the fact that the Americans were planning to bomb Japan. The Japanese surgical strike was purely preemptive and entirely justified and defensive, and indeed the entire war on the part of Japan was justified in the Pacific, considering American aggression. So when that was pretty much exposed, it was one of those things that they were impressed enough where, okay, he didn't say anything that's threatening current affairs. He didn't say anything that's going to upset anybody about contemporary issues. So they were going to bring me back to talk about veterans issues again, which is a fairly safe issue because veterans are a fairly impotent lot. There are many veterans, of course, in terms of the population, but it's not like they're united. They're not a united front. In fact, they're very divided. They spend an enormous amount of time literally trying to destroy each other and attacking each other. The veterans community is as ugly as it can get, which is why I've pretty much removed myself from veterans politics. And in terms of that, they were going to have me kind of address that. And then what happened was I was interviewed by Above Top Secret. So when I was interviewed for 15 minutes by Above Top Secret, just like within months after being on Coast to Coast AM, it had to do with the Roswell incident. And I, of course, was exposing aspects of it that most people did not want to hear because there was a lot of government investment in covering up the incident. And the way I exposed it, it wasn't in line with what the government message was and or misrepresentation was. And so I was called by the producer of George Noé, Tom Danheiser, and told I would never be on Coast to Coast AM again. And I wasn't for about half a decade, for about 5 years after my original Pearl Harbor thing. Now, to put this into perspective for people how ugly this is, the attack on Pearl Harbor still has many veterans and survivors of Pearl Harbor that go to Pearl Harbor every year, and they're brought back on December 7th, and everybody reminisces, and they speak about the war, or basically the attack, and what nobody in the United States understands is, well, how are these guys still alive? The reality was that all of the men at Pearl Harbor who were on the ships that were attacked were extraordinarily young men, because they took men like my father, George Joseph Henry Dietrich, who was for all intents and purposes, one of the older sailors. He was a gunboat patrol sailor from the China Theater. And like many other older sailors who were survivors of World War I, he had combat experience. They needed the combat experienced men, so they took them and they put them on the carriers, they put them on the submarines. These were the war-winning weapons of modern war, and they got them the hell out of Pearl Harbor. All of the ships at Pearl Harbor were World War I Dreadhulks that wouldn't last another war. The Japanese, they felt, would be doing them an enormous favor by scrapping these things so they could salvage them. So they put all the young swabbies on them who were literally, at that time, you could join the Navy at the age of 16 years old, sometimes younger. And they put all these young sailors who were like that on these ships. And when they lost them, they didn't lose anything as far as they were concerned in terms of combat experience. They were entirely expendable because they didn't need them. They had the older men to train younger men who, once a war was started, they could draft. So these expendable individuals, many of them died. And those that survived, of course, are still with us today because they were so young back then. They were like literally just coming into like entering adult puberty at that time. So now they're sitting around, but nevertheless, they are dying off. World War II veterans are dying off at the rate of, you know, thousands a day, literally, because you had 27 million men under arms ultimately or in uniform, in service that were press ganged into service in World War II. So they died by the thousands on a daily basis because there were millions of them in service. So when all these men are dying, every time you don't bring me on to speak about Pearl Harbor and the reality of Pearl Harbor, you go another year and hundreds of thousands, because they're dying by the thousands every day. Tens of thousands die in a month, hundreds of thousands die in a year. So every year, there's less and less of them. So you've got the sailor, George Norrie, who betrays his own servicemen under the command of his admiral, Bobby Ray Inman, who would gladly sacrifice his own servicemen without a thought, indeed with a diabolical glee. And of course, they don't bring on someone like myself to speak the truth. And they had instead, oftentimes on Pearl Harbor Day, would bring on other people who would just reinforce the bullshit, and people who would say stupid things like, "Oh, well, the Japanese attack Pearl Harbor because they're naturally aggressive," which is like, there's nowhere you can go with that. I mean, that's not even, you know. And so with that level of duplicity, that level of just hideous, shall we say, suppression, I have nothing but contempt for George Norrie and Bobby Ray Inman, because, of course, they have no respect for their fellow servicemen. So that pretty much is what it comes down to. And instead, of course, what happened was I became a figure on Coast to Coast AM through this very bizarre situation where they brought on John B. Wells. And John B. Wells, it turned out, was independently wealthy to an extent. He was heir. He was he was a rich boy who was the child of someone who had amassed a lot of money. His father was a World War II veteran, and he had some respect for the servicemen, or at least paid lip service to it. And then he basically got on Coast to Coast AM after years of being in radio. And because he worked on Saturdays, he had control over his own schedule, because everyone else, this is the problem with many of these, shall we say, established figures, is that they work a 9-to-5 schedule. They work 5 days a week, and then the rest of the week disappears. It's basically a blur to them. And so the weekend, basically someone else takes over, and he had carte blanche. So John B. Wells kept bringing myself on because it gave him a name. We could talk about veterans issues. We could talk about the Second World War. And he was able to build himself up a far more bigger following and reputation off of that. Unfortunately, what happened was when he was ultimately fired from Coast to Coast AM, because he kept bringing myself on, he told me personally that that was why they fired him, was because he kept bringing myself on. Then I said, well, then good. Then now you can start your own program based on all of the audience that you've amassed. Which is what he did. I'm not going to name it because I don't want anyone subscribing to his stupid program. But at any rate, he when he started his own program, based on the audience we had built up, then he was charging people to subscribe. So he was getting 14, 17 hours, $17, $14 to $17 a subscription once a month. And from thousands of people, of course, he's making, tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars on a monthly basis, which was obscene. And then, of course, he refused to bring myself on because at that point he said it was too dangerous. He said, well, I'm on my own now, and I have, my own. He has his own private collection of jet planes, by the way, decommissioned American warplanes, actual jets,
Really?
a private fleet
Can't
that
believe
are, of
it.
course, disarmed. But
That's amazing.
But he says, I don't want to lose all that. I don't want to lose, all this shit. And I'm like saying, well, then why did you go into radio? I mean, why'd you go into public speaking? Well, it's different now. And and he said he was dissuaded from speaking to myself by Richard Dolan, of course. And
Oh, boy, that's great. I'm telling you. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
yeah.
I hate to say this because I don't like to speak badly about anybody, but there's always been something about Richard Dolan I couldn't put my finger on, and I still can't.
Well,
I'll just
I'll put it there for you.
Okay.
Yeah, the politics are that, of course, when I was at the Presidio military base, working as a Department of Defense librarian for almost a decade, ultimately, when I went from the position of a librarian's aide or assistant to a military reference technician to ultimately a Department of Defense librarian, I was given the charge or the duties of liaison responsibilities to Michael Aquino, who, of course, is an infamous figure in the black operations world, and justifiably so. And this individual was involved in psychological warfare operations, mainly directed against the American public to keep them terrorized, that they always felt the need for security, which always helped to justify in the larger scale an enormous military that was sapping all of their budget. Now he's changed his Google Plus page so that you can't see it unless you subscribe. But if anyone bothers to subscribe to the Michael Aquino Google Plus page, the person that he aggressively promotes is Richard Dolan. Richard Dolan works for Michael Aquino, and Richard Dolan was actually moved on orders of Michael Aquino to Rochester, New York. Now, Rochester, New York was where my father was born, of all places, and my father left it at a very young age to join the Navy as an escape, because Rochester, New York was a company town that was run by George Eastman, who developed Kodak Company. And Kodak Company was this huge camera and optics technology firm in its day of hard mechanization prior to the development by the Japanese of high technologies that overwhelmed it. It was an enormous defense contractor. And what happened was that when it finally shut down, it was just a bizarre, very secretive corporation. George Eastman ultimately killed himself, the man who ran the corporation, because he was so poisoned by all of the chemicals and technologies he developed for photographic mechanisms that he was in chronic neurological pain. He had developed his own calendar. Whenever I dealt with Department of Defense contracts with Kodak Company, the DOD contracts from Kodak optic lenses for their bomb sights, et cetera, sniper scopes, all the rest of this stuff. The paperwork would always say that this product was developed on Kodak Company time. And what that meant was he had his own calendar. He had developed his own calendrical system separate from the Gregorian calendar that he used to keep all of his employees behind barbed wire and razor wire and electrified fence. They had their own hospital. They had their own daycare center. They had their own schools. All of this was to prevent their interacting with the public, and they had their own effing calendar. These people were on a totally different calendar from everyone else's calendar. They were in their own world. And so he had his own city within a city, a concentration camp environment. So if anyone became injured, which they often did, or died in these various chemical explosions, chemical burns, fell in an acid vat, they literally buried them on site. They literally had a mortuary on site. They literally had their own hospital to tend with them, to recover them if they could. But all of this was kept hidden from the public so that none of this industrial lack of safety standards would be investigated by labor unions or the federal government. So ultimately, when he died, and the Japanese demolished Kodak on the world market, it became a ghost city, and now it's occupied by a single man, and that is David Lewis Anderson. And David Lewis Anderson was a doctor for the United States Army who claims to be some kind of temporal physicist, who Al Bielek, who was a victim on the USS Eldridge, Al Bielek was a survivor of the Philadelphia experiment, was being interviewed by Peter Moon, who took Al Bielek around in a car, and they were going through various areas in upstate New York near the Montauk region up into, you know, the Kodak area and Rochester, New York. And Al Bielek told Peter Moon, the author of much of the Montauk materials that people can popularly access, Al Bielek said, oh, that's where Dr. David Lewis Anderson works. His family is the dynasty that controls time travel. And so all of this, it led to my understanding through Michael Aquino, the years I was working with him, that there was an incredible budget battle between Michael Aquino and David Lewis Anderson over who would get allocated aspects of the black budget. And we're talking, of course, they were fighting over millions and millions of dollars. And so they hated each other. They would write various papers to basically defame each other and disclaim each other's accomplishments. And what happened was that David Lewis Anderson was somehow in the midst of his involvement with what Michael Aquino called the Montauk Mafia, as opposed to what Aquino dominated on the West Coast of the United States, the Zodiac Mafia. And these are terms that need to be a little bit explained to the American public. The military, of course, they're basically less than 1% of the population. You get the Department of Defense, which I was working for at the time I was affiliated with Aquino under orders. The Department of Defense is 100,000 bureaucrats, the overwhelming majority of whom have never seen service in a uniform. And you put them together with all the branches of service, including the Coast Guard, the National Guard, and the Reserves. And all of that together, all the branches of service and the DOD, come to less than 1% of the population of the United States. Less than 1%. So you've got less than 1% of the population of the United States that gets an overwhelming amount of all of your money every year, well over 50% of the discretionary income of the federal budget every single year. So you've got basically this tiny cult of people with this enormous amount of income, more money than God, that they're fighting over within certain projects that are never monitored because they're national security and therefore can never be accounted for. And that means they can do whatever they want with the money. They build their empires and they operate like mafias. They operate like drug dealers. So when you think of Michael Aquino and David Lewis Anderson, think of, say, for instance, a East Coast rapper who's some black guy who's involved with Death Row Records, and you think of a West Coast rapper who's some black guy who's involved with some other record company, and they get on the net and the circuit, and they're all dissing each other and saying that they're better gangsters and they got bigger dicks, and before you know it, they're shooting at each other. This is what happened to Tupac Shakur. I mean, it's just like, you know, gangster fights amongst rappers, and they're literally killing each other. That's what was going on with David Louis Anderson and Michael Aquino. And so what happened was that Michael Aquino literally deployed Richard Dolan to move his family into Rochester, New York. Now, the reason this is astonishing is because Rochester, New York is a toxic cesspit. That's one of the reasons my dad moved. I mean, Eastman Kodak would pay all the local farmers to bury his toxic chemical waste in their fields. And so it is a literally a toxic waste dump. The idea that someone would move his family in there shows Richard Dolan's commitment to Michael Aquino, who promotes him very aggressively. And this can be ascertained just by going on YouTube. And there's certain videos on YouTube, and you'll see Michael Aquino actually entering commentary on YouTube about his boy, Richard Dolan. And who's the boss of Michael Aquino? He works now, since he was forced to retire because of everything I exposed about the child molestation scandals at the Presidio military base, which ultimately was forced into closure. They had to close the base because the scandals were so extensive and so monumental that so that they could destroy all evidence of anything taking place that otherwise would have been exposed. They had to actually close the base down. They converted it, and it's the only national park in the United States which leases its property to private owners. Every single national park in the United States is, of course, federal property. You don't lease it. It's like Yellowstone. You don't go to Yellowstone National Park and say, hey, to like, you know, investors, you want to like set up a real estate company here? Of course you don't do that. But in Presidio, they do. And of course, they brought in George Lucas and Walt Disney. So Walt Disney as a corporation and Lucasfilms, of course, which is now a subsidiary to Disney, took over all these parts that used to be the scandalized areas like the Letterman Army Medical Center, where human experimentation was done, literally human experimentation on voluntary prisoners who surrendered their rights for experimental purposes in exchange for opportunities at a gubernatorial pardon from a death sentence, revocation of a life sentence, you know, shortening of prison sentences and whatnot. So human experimentation was ongoing. That's all demolished now and replaced by a George Lucas building. You have Industrial Lights and Magic. You have the various other places like the Child Daycare Center were taken over by where all these kids were molested. And of course, that was deconstructed. Now you've got a Disney Museum on top of it. You know, all of this is because as private property, no one can investigate these areas without suing Disney or suing George Lucas. You can't investigate those areas anymore. And all of the tunnel areas were basically boarded up, blasted shut, because these were bunkers that were developed in case of nuclear war, command centers for the Nike-Zeus missile system, which would have been launched out from behind the hills of Marin County, the missiles themselves, but the control mechanisms and stations were all in the Presidio. You know, all of these areas are now boarded up, closed up, blasted shut, cemented over, and you've got these private buildings on top that you would have to sue a private company for that's worth billions of dollars in order to get access to these areas again. So they pretty much locked it up tight with that strategy. Now, here's the irony. So because of this, Michael Aquino was never able to retire as a general. He had to retire from the military, from the United States Army, as a colonel. But he continued his career because of his massive security clearances that were international in scope. He was a member of the World Affairs Council. He was on secondment to NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. This meant that he didn't just have national security clearances. He had international security clearances. You don't let somebody like that go. So when he was scandalized and couldn't serve with the U.S. Army anymore, he became a deputy director in the NSA. Now, the NSA, of course, has many deputy directors, just like major corporations have many vice presidents. But who is Michael Aquino's boss, the man who directs the NSA? Admiral Bobby Ray Inman. So what does that mean? That means that George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM and Michael Aquino the satanic chaplain of the United States military forces, not just the U.S. Army. He wrote the chaplain's handbook for all the armed services, inclusive of the Coast Guard, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marine Corps. This guy, who's a deputy director at the NSA, has the same boss as George Noy. So that means that Bobby Ray Inman gives orders to both Michael Aquino and George Noy. And who does George Noy always bring on? Richard Dolan. There's your connection. They're all connected. It's all NSA. It's all Office of War Information. It's all incestuous. It's, you've got this little circle jerk, and this is what everyone is exposed to. If you think that's odd, the reason that Mark Snyder was so put off by Richard Dolan is what Mark Snyder is wondering. Is that Mark Snyder is wondering, how is it that Richard Dolan, who's this history, he's got a degree in history, he's a professor who's never taught at a university, so he's obviously not a person who's used that history degree, which is basically a liberal arts degree, in academia, and yet he writes in this academic fashion where he just puts in tons of footnotes so it looks all official and very academic. But he does this without a academic background. It's not like he's got tenure or is a board holder, a plank holder in one of these universities or something like that. He's moved into an industrial dump site, living on a toxic, wasteland. And here's this dude who's pumping out all these books on UFOs and UFO sightings. And what do they have him do? They bring him to speak all over the United States about the Twin Towers collapse on 9/11. I mean, people can look this up. They can vet this. Is one of the primary speakers on the collapse of the Twin Towers is Richard Dolan. Now, he's not an engineer. He's not an architect. He what would he know about the collapse of the Twin Towers? What on earth would he know that would be of any substance or, it's absolutely preposterous. But this is, of course, because he's a government shill. I mean, and anyone who doesn't recognize that is just naive, just by on that basis alone. And of course, he told John B. Wells, oh, don't interview Douglas Dietrich. And then John B. Wells, then following Dolan's lead, becomes a bottom bitch to a bottom bitch. So there's in a circle the ugly politics of the paranormal in a nutshell, that very much the tip of the iceberg. And so that's the ugliness that we're dealing with. And I'm certain you get hints of this, Mark, by the interviews that you conduct over the years with many people who have been in the field of ufology, and the gang stalking that's involved, the suffering that they have. And that's one of the things that makes the case of Dr. David Lewis Anderson so intriguing and so sinister, is that David Lewis Anderson, of course, is apparently involved in producing cascade memories, basically a kind of false memory syndrome in many people. And this is where I try to explain to people the nuances involved in this. When it comes to Al Bielek, I want to assure everyone that Al Bielek was an honest man. Al Bielek was a survivor of a terrible experience on the USS Eldridge that involved the use of Tesla technology. The United States Navy was abusing Tesla technology in the sense that Nikola Tesla was someone who was terribly abused all his life in the United States. He had come here as a wide-eyed idealist who was technologically brilliant and yet socially incredibly naive. And because of that, he was exploited by Thomas Edison. He was exploited by the various moguls and dynasties of industry. And he never got anything of substance in return. This is a man who ultimately became understandably embittered and realized he was in the evil empire of the United States. And during the Second World War, he took everything that wasn't nailed down, whatever blueprints that he had, and he handed them to either his son-in-law or his nephew. I always get confused on the subject and can never remember it correctly. But his son-in-law or his nephew was a Yugoslav diplomat, a diplomat for the nation of Yugoslavia. And he gave him everything he could to take home to Yugoslavia, where, of course, he had been born. When Nikola Tesla was born, he was in a part of Yugoslavia that was, at that period in history, a part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Technically, then, he was born in the Croatian region of Yugoslavia that was a part of Austria or Hungary. And later on would be identified as part of the new land of the South Slavs, or Yugoslavia, after World War I. And in terms of Nikola Tesla, he identified as an ethnic Serb. So he was of Croatian nationality, one could say, Austrian imperial citizenship, or a Hungarian imperial citizenship, and Serbian ethnicity. And he was very much a humanist, who, in the sense that he identified with humanity, and for that reason felt that the United States alone shouldn't have these technologies because they used them for industrial exploitation and nothing else. Of course, the situation with J.P. Morgan was much more complicated. Nikola Tesla actually dated J.P. Morgan's daughter. He had his issues and did not want to marry J.P. Morgan's daughter. Had he married her, our world would be a very different place, because J.P. Morgan would have given him unlimited funds. J.P. Morgan was so insulted, so offended by Nikola Tesla not marrying his daughter, that he did his best to suppress Nikola Tesla's technologies ultimately. And Tesla's new supporters, some of the wealthiest men in the world, were on the Titanic when it sank. And that was one of the reasons for the conspiracy to sink the Titanic by J.P. Morgan, was to prevent Tesla technology from becoming the property of some of these other brilliant, very well-financed, incredibly astronomically wealthy men. And some of the wealthiest men in the world died on the Titanic. And so actually giving up their opportunities for seating on lifeboats to women and children. So that's truly the test point right there, and the litmus test for even the wealthiest among us can be, when it comes down to the end point of our lives, redeemed. Now, in terms of what we had with Nikola Tesla, of course, he ultimately faced a terrible situation in the Second World War, because Yugoslavia was divided between the Axis. Croatia was aligned with the Third Reich as a fascist ally. Serbia was invaded by the communists under Josip Broz Tito. And when he gave everything he did to his nephew or his son-in-law, and it was taken back to that war-torn area of the world, much of the technology went to the Third Reich, and the other much of the technology went to the Soviet Union. And so through the Third Reich, some of the technologies were given to their imperial Japanese ally. So you now had Tesla technology in the hands of the National Socialistisch, the Nazis, as the Americans denigrate them, the communists of the Soviet Union, and the imperial Japanese. So America was no longer monopolizing that technology. Now, so they, of course, revoked Nikola Tesla's citizenship, and they told him they were approaching his home to intern him, arrest him, and intern him as a non-citizen, and torture him until he cooperated with the Americans and gave them everything he knew, because much of what he had was in his mind. He thought holographically, retained much information in his head. His blueprints are very little help for many people because of that reason. And he killed himself before the Americans could show up. So when the Americans did arrive, it was the OAP, the Office of Alien Property, that confiscated all of his properties. And the Office of Alien Property was created specifically by Franklin Delano Roosevelt to steal all of the properties of all of the Japanese who had been interned in the United States, as well as many Germans and Italians. Now, what needs to be emphasized is that the Japanese owned, after generations of living in the United States for generations, all of the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the world, the overwhelming majority of the world's produce that is on the world market is grown in the Central Valley of California. On old official maps, that used to say on the maps, Jap Valley. So all of these generations of Japanese that were interred, all of their real estate property was stolen. All of their fiscal property was confiscated, their bank accounts, etc. All of their property, period, was taken by the Office of Alien Property. These are because they were now officially enemy aliens that were interned in the United States, just like Native Americans were considered prisoners of war, whether they were women, children, or the elderly, because they were all at war, technically, as Native American nations with the United States government, which had declared war on all of them. So this Office of Alien Property, which had stolen all of this, took Tesla's property because he was now an enemy alien. And he was dead, of course. They confiscated his property, put it under national security to this day, and, of course, went ahead to try and abuse his technology without his guidance. That's what led to the disaster at the USS Eldridge in the Philadelphia experiment. Nobody was there to tell them how to use this shit. And one of the survivors, Al Bielek, was abused further. He went through all of this horrible experience, lost his brother, and then whenever he would relate the story, would F it all up at the end by telling people, and then the U.S. Navy reversed my aging process and emplaced me in the womb of another mother so I would be born as someone else and not remember all this till now. And that totally discredited everything he said. The source of his saying that is David Lewis Anderson. That's what David Lewis Anderson's responsibility was to tell everybody with a cascade memory that they had been reversed in the aging process, warped back in time, and inserted in the womb of another mother so they could be reborn. And once Al Bielek said that, nobody could give credence to anything else he said. That is the hideousness of psychological operations. And this was the man who had a big budget battle with Michael Aquino over who would get the most money so that they could deploy their toy technologies to mess with American minds. And much of that kind of reverse process, I'm inserted in the womb of another mother, that whenever you hear that coming from somebody's lips, that is David Lewis Anderson talking. That's his trademark. And so that's what we're talking about when it comes to these kinds of, shall we say, black operations, budget rivalries, discrediting process for people who have had legitimate experiences. And hopefully now you realize some of the challenges that I deal with as a public informant.
It used to be the coast to coast was a lot more interesting. It seems to be that it's just very bland now. So you're saying the NSA is basically in charge of coast to coast?
Oh, very much so. As a matter of fact, I'll have to basically kind of go back through some of my notes here, and maybe you could help me with this. If you could remember exactly what was the flight that was shot down over Ukraine? There was a airplane flight that was shot down over the Ukraine. And it was something that, of course, hundreds of people died on. And so when we were dealing with that tragedy, Coast to Coast AM that very night had an airlines specialist on. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can.
The same night.
Yeah, the same night. They knew it was going to happen. So the important thing to remember is that when you're talking about when I bring up Billy Joe Red McCombs, by the way, who's the business tycoon who was named one of Forbes magazine's top 400 richest Americans. Granted, the last time I checked, that was back in 2005. He is the chairman of the board of directors of Academy. Academy is spelled A-C-A-D-E-M-I. That is, of course, what was formerly XE, which is a elemental symbol. It's actually pronounced Xenon, which meant a lot of people thought it was Xingnan or a Chinese word. So they thought that the Chinese had brought up Blackwater or purchased Blackwater. Blackwater was, of course, the original mercenary company that was a federal no-bid contracted mercenary security enforcement corporation. Blackwater became infamous for international crimes against humanity because it hired a bunch of coked up thugs that would party on the streets and then blow everybody away whenever they felt like it. Now, Blackwater became Xenon, which a lot of Americans confuse with Zinan, a Chinese word. It wasn't bought up by the Chinese. They just changed their name to stay ahead of international lawsuits and war crimes trials. And that became Academy, spelled with an I at the end. And the chairman of the board of directors is Billy Joe Red McCombs. So you've got the director for Blackwater combined with the director for the National Security Agency, the former Federal Reservist Bobby Ray Inman, working together that own Clear Channel, that owns Premier Radio Network, that owns Coast to Coast AM. So when it was Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 that got shot down over the Ukraine, it was shot down by these Academy punks, formerly Blackwater mercenaries, that were trying to kill Vladimir Putin. Because
really? They
thought, yeah, the Vladimir Putin would regularly fly in his version of Air Force One. The Russian version of Air Force One was almost identical in airline silhouette to the Malaysian Airlines flight MH17. And he would fly the same routes back and forth from Russia. And these clowns shot down the wrong airplane.
Huh.
And when they shot it down, they killed the overwhelming majority of AIDS researchers in the world were on that flight. Hundreds of them were headed towards Australia to basically go to some international AIDS conference where they could further research on AIDS. They were all taken out along with an infant, several other children, all this evil shit. And that same night, they had a special expert guest on aviation's disasters. This was somebody who was, I'm trying to remember his name. He was dealing with, some kind of, some kind of flight 700 or something like that, that was shot down. He had actually been arrested for theft of evidence. The clown that they had brought on in the past. He was some kind of dude whose wife was a stewardess, he was precisely scheduled to be on that night. And they bring him on to talk about Flight 700 and how it was taken down. And somehow that son of a bitch is on the exact same night that flight, that flight was shot down over the Ukraine. So when that flight gets shot down, they have him on air and they say, oh, it's a good thing you're with us because, oh, guess what? Oh, this flight just got shot down by the Russians. So when they shot down the wrong plane, then, of course, what they did was they
blame it on the Russians.
They blamed it on the Russians.
They blame everything on the Russians. They
yes.
do that.
Oh, yes. My. Yes. And this guy is up there. He had a very generic name. His name's quite innocuous. It's almost impossible for me to remember. But people can look up the day that flight was shot down. They can look up Coast to Coast that night, and they'll see they had this guy on.
You know, let me back up a little bit here. We're almost out of time. I can't believe it. So you're saying we had Art Bell, who was the original broadcaster on Coast to Coast. And he was the real deal. He was really interested in stuff, and he had great guests on, and the show just took off and became world famous. And then they brought in George Norrie, and then the NSA took it over. Is that what happened?
Pretty much, yeah. That's what was going on with that. And of course, what had happened was that when I was brought on as a guest, it was because it was considered a non-threatening subject. Whenever they brought me on, it was to talk about subjects that were only non-threatening. I spoke once with George Norrie about the sinking of the Indianapolis, and so whenever he speaks to me, it's only about naval subjects because he's a naval spin doctor. and it was only for a limited amount of time. And so it was very frustrating. And then John B. Wells was bringing me on for a period of time. As I said, he took advantage of that to make his career a takeoff. And then he started off on his own with his own show. And then after that would have nothing to do with me because I was basically too threatening. And then we got basically the kind of pablum that you have on Coast to Coast AM now, where all they talk about is the afterlife and spiritual issues, because most of the people listening to them are palliative care and are seniors who are basically hospice bound or homebound. And, these are seniors who are thinking about the other side and what it's going to be like when they transition, because that's the overwhelming majority of their listeners. Very few people listen to terrestrial broadcast radio anymore. And the overwhelming majority of the listeners to Coast to Coast AM are not people who purchase things that keep the station or the business going. So it's basically like a Soviet state-run radio show for the homebound, the welfare recipients. The only people who are listening to it who make any money that could purchase anything that they advertise are, of course, night workers, which are basically pimps and prostitutes and policemen who bust them, the paramedics who pump their stomachs, and, you know, everything else is basically it's empty air. I mean, they're talking to nobody. There's nobody listening to them. Anybody who downloads them later on electronically is going to fast forward all the commercials, so they're not going to be buying anything. So it's not a money-making arena. So obviously the only people who could afford to keep Coast to Coast AM going are now the government. It's basically the government at this point.
But you know, when it started out, it was great. I mean, when our Bill had it, and just when George first took over, and then they slowly watered it down intentionally and killed it, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah. They very much did. So, well, they don't need to make money. I mean, it's a state, what you'd call a state media outlet. So they're very much limited to what they can talk about, and their audience, of course, there's no youthful listeners. And that was what had happened with Art Bell. I said he couldn't make a comeback. I told everybody when Art Bell kept saying, you know, Art Bell had his day in the sun. He had his own issues, which are personal. He has personal issues. But when it came to making a comeback, there was no way he could have done it, because the people he had originally introduced were not the people younger people want to listen to. You'll notice that all of Art Bell's former guests, back when you and I were listening, and it was intriguing at the time, it was engaging at the time, it was different at the time, they've become very much old news. And what Art Bell's biggest problem was that he later on got on to, I'm forgetting who it was. It was the same station that was a satellite relay station that was running, what's his name? The guy who talks sex all the time. I can't even remember his name.
Howard now. Stern?
Yes, thank you. I couldn't get that out without you. Howard Stern. It was the same channel that was running Howard Stern. And this was the problem. You have to pay to listen to it. And people would pay to listen to Howard Stern because he's entertaining. But when Art Bell came back on and you had to pay to listen to Art Bell, all Art Bell did, exactly what I predicted. I said, you know, that old fart's just going to go on speed dial. He's going to call up the same old, tired old guests who are old as dirt and they fart dust. And, you know, he's going to bring on the same people over and over again that he always had. Michio Kaku comes to mind immediately. Oh, and yeah, shit, yeah, like, yeah, that. Yeah. And I said, once he does that, nobody is going to tune in, because anybody who paid for that shit started thinking, hey, I hear these guys every night on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Why would I want to pay money to listen to Art Bell talk to these same mofos that I hear every night for free? So that, of course, crashed and burned. And then he tried it with Dark Matter Radio Network, which had its own politics. And that crashed and burned because, you know, he was on speed dial with all the same old people. He had no ability to adapt. He didn't want to adapt. And so his day was over. And
was he threatened? I thought he was threatened.
Oh, he says that. Man, the only thing he was threatened by was the fact that the young people said, who the F are you, old man? I mean, that's basically what he was threatened by. So he says, oh, I was threatened. You know, that was that. No, he was not. It was that. That's that was the least of his issues. Honestly, he was it was just the fact that he was now irrelevant. He was irrelevant. As were all of the guests that he used to bring on, that they just were not relevant. And that was the issue with him. And in terms of after that, then you have, you know, other politics that I could bring up. But we might save that for another time. But definitely, Mark, I want you to know that I think it's a service that, even though people might think, oh, this is just a bunch of ugly gossip, I think people really need to be made aware of the politics of the paranormal and the context.
I think so, too. I mean, it was a good education for me, and I don't know where the whole hour went. It was fantastic, Douglas. I appreciate it. Why don't you put a little plug or two in, and then we'll call it an hour, and I want to just thank you for coming on. This has been fantastic.
Well, I very much appreciate the time with you, Mark, and believe me, I think that you're one of the good guys that are out there, an earnest seeker, and anyone who wants to look myself up, just go to www.ddietrich.com. Our web mistress is Mona Lee McRae. She has her own website on which she sells her own music. She has always been top 10 on Reverb Nation regional charts. And the only issue I have with the website, of course, is that the software for it doesn't accommodate foreign words, which I use a lot of. I actually write a lot of things in Russian Cyrillica or the Cyrillic alphabet or Japanese or Chinese iconographs or characters. So these can't be interpreted by the software program that she was using. So they all come out looking like a bunch of expletives. But other than that, you'll find much information that you need about myself on probably more than you ever want to know on that website. And again, that's www.ddietrich.com. Mona Lee McRae, the web mistress, her own website is www.monalee.com. Mona Lee is spelled MonaLeeigh.com. And with ddietrich.com, you can, of course, order DVDs from myself or electronic downloads of three different presentations, and that pretty much helps. You can also make donations via PayPal at lsolomon1@rgv.rr.com. That's spelled LSOLOMON, numeric 1, .rgv for Rio Grande Valley, .rr for Roadrunner Service.com. And at lsolomon1@rgv.rr.com, you can just send donations to help myself, to help support myself as a public informant. I am not paid for anything that I do. And just emphasize the fact that these are donations or orders. You need to differentiate that. And it takes her about, we don't have an automated download system, so give her about half a day or 12 hours to find out that you've emailed her so that she can respond. And that, of course, is the email address of Laura Lee Solomon, who used to produce for Mark Snyder when he was involved with the Revolution Radio. And so definitely we're a happy family in our own right, kind of extend it. And definitely glad to be able to speak to Mark Snyder. And I look forward to, of course, whenever this is published, receiving the link. And I'll, of course, promote it on my own Facebook timeline, where, of course, people can friend myself. They can go to my public community fan page at www.facebook.com/Douglas Dwayne Dietrich. Douglas is spelled with one S. Dwayne is spelled D-U-A-N-E. And Dietrich, you just put the words diet and rich together, D-I-E-T-R-I-C-H, Douglas Dwayne Diet Rich, all lowercase, all one word. Or you can personally friend me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Douglas D. Dietrich. So thank you very much, Mark. You're a brother from another mother, just like those poor bastards like Al Bielek who get shrunk back in time and inserted in another womb, as far as I'm concerned.
All righty. Have a good evening, Douglas.
Thank you. You as well. Bye-bye. Take care.